Are you tired of the 9-to-5 lifestyle? Do you want more freedom to do what you want, when you want it, without sacrificing your current income? Then this is the show for you. Every week, we dive into John's journey towards financial freedom and everything he has learned since 2014. Real estate investing, cryptocurrency, stocks, private lending, foreign residency, tax saving strategies, infinite banking, assets protection, and much more. Now, here is your host, the founder of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rickgarn.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when you're listening to this. This is John Rickgarn, your host of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. Today, I actually wanted to touch base on two specific topics, kind of in the wealth management, wealth strategy, and banking strategies, if you will. Now, if you recall on episode 3 with Barry Brooksby, who's my advisor for whole life insurance, we briefly talked about the infinite banking concept, how you can utilize whole life insurance. On top of that, there's another strategy that I myself have found interesting where one can utilize HELOC versus a mortgage. And with not much difference with your overall cash flow, instead of your traditional 30-year mortgage, you know, pay off your home in 30 years, like everyone says you're supposed to do, you can pay it off in 5 to 7 years, you know, maybe 10 years at most. Yeah. So it's a very interesting strategy. With that, and to go more into detail about it, I have on today Adam Edwards, who is a replace your mortgage and replace your banker consultant and licensed life producer. Now, Adam and I met quite a while through, shared friends in a Facebook group, I believe.
Yeah.
So right. Started talking back and forth. Both of us, obviously, were familiar with Nelson Nash, Become Your Own Banker, and the infinite banking concept. I had also heard of the HELOC strategy, but I myself was a little bit, you know, curious of how that worked. And I'm very much of a number visual guy. So I kind of wanted to see, you know, how does that work? How can it benefit whether it's your primary home or an investment property as well? So with that, Adam, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, great. Good introduction, man. I appreciate that. And I'm happy to be here. Like you said, yeah, we've connected multiple times, just, you know, friendly conversations, questions, just kind of shooting ideas off of each other probably over the last year, maybe something like that. So
sure.
I
always like connecting with like-minded individuals. I mean, I think both of us have always, you know, coming across people that, well, Dave Ramsey says infinite banking is a scam, so therefore, you know, who are we to question? And it just kind of shuts off from there. Yeah. And I will freely admit, years ago, I was a very ardent Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman follower, you know, all debt is bad, only get term insurance, et cetera, et cetera. I'm reminded of a quote that has stuck with me for quite some time by one of the real estate guys, Russell Gray. A mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. And I think too many times in society, we just hear, you know, whatever, 30-year mortgage is the way to go. And we close off our mind to any other ideas or, you know, term life insurance, invest the difference. And again, that's the way to go. And we close off our mind to other ideas. And I'm not really here to say, you know, one's necessarily better than the other, but I think for anyone, especially looking for financial independence, has to be open-minded, you know, see the scenarios, how does it work? Could it benefit them? Weigh the pros and cons and make their own decision versus, well, I'm doing this because so-and-so said so, and that's the end of it. That doesn't relay independent thinking. That's just, you know, following the masses, so to speak. So with that, Adam, maybe we'll just quick highlight on the infinite banking concept. Maybe you can share how you got started on it and maybe it can clear up. I think there's just a lot of miscommunication and misinformation out there. And I've heard from many people of, well, it's a scam, but they never exactly explain, okay, well, why is it a scam? And if anything, it's, well, Dave Ramsey says so, so that's the end of the discussion. So could you elaborate, you know, both on your background of how you you know, got familiar with the infinite banking concept, and why do so many people say it's a scam, and is it a scam, I guess?
Yeah, I think I'll start with this, and this kind of touches on what you just mentioned. And part of the problem is people don't want to think, and they're not willing to think and have an open mind. To me, that's the stem of the whole issue with most Americans. Okay, people just do. Mm-hmm. They don't do any deep thinking or personal research. They just do what everyone else is doing, which is kind of human nature. So, and I've fallen into that. I'm sure you have.
Oh, you know, I'm guilty as well.
So with anything, when you're willing to take a step back, okay, and look at things a little bit differently and have an open mind, maybe there's different ways to do things, and maybe those ways are better and more efficient and can put you in a better financial position. Okay. Strictly talking about financial matters. So I wanted to start with that, but yeah. So how I learned about the infinite banking concept was actually through joining Replace Your Mortgage and learning about HELOCs. Okay. That's how I found out about infinite banking. So before I dive into infinite banking, as far as the HELOC strategy goes, okay, there's different ways of looking at it, okay, and there's different ways of using it. It's not always about just paying the house off as soon as possible. Is that something that you can do and that can be achieved? Yes, absolutely. It may also be to have liquidity, to have access to money, okay? So maybe you're an individual who has dumped a ton of money over the years towards paying your mortgage down. Right. Maybe you want to liquidate some of that equity that you've built up over the years. It's for people like that. Or maybe you just want to have the option to just pay interest 1 month and not have your full mortgage payment, which is typically principal interest and then an escrow account. Which is a much smaller amount. So maybe you, rather than paying that bigger amount and having that stay every single month and not change, maybe you want to have the control and the option to pay this 1 month and take your cash flow and direct it somewhere else. But okay, so it's all, a lot of it's about control. But my initial motivation to learn about it was to pay my house off.
Okay.
That's why I was doing it. So long story short, my wife and I were in our first home. We had been there for about 12 years. We were on a 15-year mortgage, and we were about 5 years from paying it off. So we had refinanced a couple times in that process, but that's where we were at. So the majority of the payment, right, was going towards principal. I liked that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I liked seeing that. So I understood how that works as far as the amortized loans and all that kind of stuff. So, but we were growing out of that house, had kids, needed to upgrade. So we wanted to get a bigger house.
Okay.
So to do that, that's more expensive. So you're going to have a bigger mortgage payment, which I didn't like, but it's just part of the deal. Okay. But to do a 15 year from a house that's this price compared to a 15 year on a house that's this didn't make sense. So we did a 30-year mortgage.
Sure.
Okay. Because the payment was lower, but
right.
Gosh, man, I look at the mortgage statement and I see the percentage of that total payment, and that the most of it was going towards interest. And I just, I didn't like that. That really bothered me. So that's what got me down the wormhole of maybe there's a different way to pay this off faster. Do I just make additional principal payments? Do I do it that way? Maybe. So I learned about the using a line of credit to essentially chunk down the principal balance. So whether it's a credit card, home equity line of credit, doesn't matter. But what you do is you have a line of credit, you take out a big chunk of that, you add it to a principal portion of a mortgage payment. So you have a balance over here, and then you just run your income into here, pay that down to zero, take another chunk out, right? So depending on your cash flow, you may be able to do that every 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months. Okay. And you'll pay it off much faster.
Okay.
That's one way of doing it. So I was doing that initially. And I learned that you can actually replace your mortgage altogether. Okay. So you can have a lender who basically pays your mortgage lender off, takes this balance over into one big HELOC.
Okay.
Okay. And then you just use that as your operating account. all of your income goes into that, all your expenses come out. And if you're cash flow positive, which is key, okay, right? Your cash flow positive spread, whatever that is, will cover the interest and the rest will reduce your principal. Okay. And every single month you'll owe less interest. So you'll have more money to go towards principal.
Okay.
And it works very, very well if your numbers work. And that's kind of the key. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I joined that group, Replace Your Mortgage. And inside of that group, there's a guy whose name is Jim Kindred.
Okay.
Okay. Jim Kindred was teaching different classes on the infinite banking concept. And I dove into that immediately. And I was just like, okay, there's something here. And it took a while to wrap my mind around it. But after being obsessed over it, okay, looking at different people on the internet, kind of doing my due diligence, came to the conclusion that, yes, this is legitimate. And I actually opened up a policy before I closed on my first lien HELOC. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of the evolution. I mean, we can go down multiple paths from there, but that's kind of how I came across the infinite banking concept.
Okay. And with the, the infinite banking concept, like you touched on, and I know you've heard, I've heard it, but, why do so many people think it's a scam? Is it just solely because they look at term insurance of, oh, I can get term insurance for, throwing out number $50 a month, and that quote, same whole life insurance, infinite banking concept is, $150, $200 a month. So, is it just the narrow-minded of I'm looking solely at the price and not the cost, or are there other aspects that, some people just don't understand how the infinite banking concept works?
Yeah. So again, I think it stems from not being willing to think, not being willing to take a step back and see the potential of it. And again, most people's view of life insurance is term insurance. So, and it's all over the commercials. It's all over the radio. Yep. that's what's being marketed by these companies to the consumers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that we can go, we're not going to do that now, but you can go really deep in the woods. Okay. As far as how these big corporations, insurance companies, mortgage lenders, how they're marketing to consumers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for the consumer's benefit in most cases. Okay. So we won't go down that road, but that's most people's view of life insurance is I want to pay the smallest amount of premium to get the most coverage. Okay.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. I mean, if you don't have a lot of reserve money, okay, and you're living tight, you got a family, you need term insurance. Okay. Sure. Just in case, God forbid something happens. So there's a place for it. Don't get me wrong, but most people, that's their only understanding of it. Okay. And anyone who hears whole life insurance is typically not going to understand that hardly at all. And if they do have any understanding of it, it's just because of what someone has told them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman. Okay. Now, what do they tell people? They say it's a ripoff.
Yep.
Okay. They say it's the world's worst place to put money. Mm-hmm. Okay. They say that if you're an insurance agent and you're selling whole life, that just by doing that, you are a terrible person and you're purposefully trying to rip people off. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's making a claim on people's integrity that he does not personally know.
Sure. Okay?
And every time I hear him talk about it, from what he says, he has no understanding on how you can actually use it, how you can design it, for one. Okay. And I've been on all these forums with people that, Dave Ramsey people. And again, not bashing him as an individual. I'm not playing that game, but he's misinformed or he's uneducated. I'm hoping that's the case. And I'm hoping it's not that he understands it. But yes, I mean, you're talking about, okay, so you can do all this research yourself. You can find out banks, okay, commercial banks, okay, how many billions and billions of dollars they own in permanent life insurance, which is whole life insurance. It's called bank-owned life insurance, okay? You can look this up on the internet.
Yeah.
Most of these banks own more cash value than they do real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a second. Okay. That's pretty substantial. And that says something to me. Okay. When you look at the Federal Reserve, a lot of their employees, their pensions, so on and so forth, are with these life insurance companies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and then when you do research on different corporations, people historically, how they've used whole life, okay, there's a lot more to it. Okay. So, you know, you can do the research yourself and find these things out. And again, most people aren't going to do that. So they're just going to kind of keep doing what they're doing. But my job and my passion is to reveal these things to people. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is the same stuff that I'm doing. Okay. So I personally have multiple policies, and my only problem financially is that I can't get enough money in there.
Sure.
I don't make enough money, and the underwriters at the insurance company cap me as far as what I can put in. So
sure.
I practice what I preach. And so that's, you know, that's pretty important too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll stop there so I can keep going, man.
No, I totally understand. I could go down the rabbit hole as well. And I appreciate, mm-hmm. like you said, practice what you preach. And just a little yes. sidebar, not a lot of people know this, but if you've watched the Susie Orman show in the past or read her books, and I don't remember which page of which book it was, but, you know, she's always pushing for, diversified mutual funds, et cetera. But yeah. she herself admits she doesn't invest in those. She has zero coupon bonds, which at face value, don't really get much. But when you get millions and millions of dollars from speaking engagements and book royalties, you know, you can throw millions of dollars in it. You know, okay, maybe it's more of a conservative approach to it. But just like you said, practicing what you preach, I look at, you know, Robert Kiyosaki. He proposes, you know, investing in real estate, starting businesses, buying gold and silver, et cetera. And I actually met him about 6 months ago, and same thing. He practices what he preaches. I'm not sure of how far it would go if he just said, I don't invest in real estate. I just buy mutual funds and ETFs or anything like that. So, you know, it's one thing to, well, they say talk the talk, but walk the walk. Not everyone, you know, does nowadays. So,
Yeah.
So taking this a step further, and I was really interested in hearing about this. So we, you know, touch base on the infinite banking concept, but as far as with, you know, mortgages versus HELOCs, and I think most people understand, you know, a HELOC, what it is and how it benefits them. Like you said, it's like a line of credit on your house or a credit card on your house. And, you know, major, renovation or want to go on a vacation or a car or whatever the case may be, then, well, instead of getting a car loan or racking up a credit card, hey, I can access this line of credit on my house, which is called a secured loan. And typically a secured loan has a lower interest rate than an unsecured loan, like your credit cards or maybe just a personal line of credit. So I think a lot of people understand that aspect of it, but if you could kind of walk through, instead of having a mortgage and replacing your mortgage, or hence the name replaceyourmortgage.com, having a HELOC instead, how does having that in place, you know, what are the benefits of that versus just a standard 30-year mortgage?
Yeah. So if you talk to any, you know, savvy financial person, wealthy person, in general, most cases, mm-hmm. okay, they're going to tell you to use leverage, okay, you know, to not pay cash for things, use other people's money, okay, mm-hmm. let your money sit and grow, have your money do what it's going to do, and then use other people's money, okay, and this is exactly what banks do, okay, so they'll say, you know, in real estate, so look at a real estate investor, okay, if they have the cash to pay for a rental property, are most of them going to pay cash for it? No, they're going to use somebody else's money. Okay. And there's
bad? Dave Ramsey says buy, you know, pay cash, you know, don't use loans to buy real estate.
I used to do that. I understand that, but, you know, to be quite frank, paying cash is probably the worst financial decision mm-hmm. you could make, because every time you pay cash for something, as you know, Nelson stated this, you finance everything that you buy.
Yep. Okay?
You either pay cash and give up that cash working for you ever again, mm-hmm. or you borrow someone else's money and you pay them interest. There's no exception to that rule. It's one or the other. So
exactly. Okay?
But as far as a HELOC and a mortgage are concerned, what banks and lenders like to be in is what's called first lien position. Okay. That's an asset on their balance sheet. So whether it's a mortgage or a home equity line of credit in first lien position, they like that because they have an asset that's collateralized. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's good. Now, if you have a mortgage, right, you can only make one mortgage payment per month unless you have biweekly payments. But
sure.
So you can only interrupt that once per month by making an additional principal payment. Okay.
Okay.
So what that will do is that will reduce the term of the loan, and it will also reduce the total interest paid on the loan. Okay. The problem with that is if you need that money back out, it's trapped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and again, going back to what I mentioned earlier, if you've paid your house down significantly over the years, you've built up all this equity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where is all that equity? Okay. It's nowhere. Okay. It can only be realized if you sell the house.
Yeah.
Or if you do a refinance or whatever. And maybe if you need to do a refinance, maybe the real estate market is down. You don't know that. Maybe you might, you know, have a loss of income or job. And if you want to pull out equity in that circumstance, do you think a bank's going to lend you money? No,
probably not.
Okay. So with the first lien HELOC, it puts the bank in a safer position because, again, they're in first lien position. They like that. Okay. Uh-huh. And it puts you in a safer position for multiple reasons. Okay. Reason number one, your minimum required payment in most cases is just interest. Okay. Which is a very small amount compared to your typical PITI and escrow account.
Sure.
Okay. So in hard times, say you lose your job. Okay, mm-hmm. You're not on the hook for that much larger payment that does not change. You're only on the hook for that. So that's one benefit. The second benefit is if you do have equity in your house, it's liquid, okay, which means you can access it if you want to, okay? Now, you don't have to, but at least it's mm-hmm. there and at least it's available. So that's appealing for some, okay? And then, again, it gives you more control, okay? Because if you want to pay it down faster, you can. But if you don't, you can just pay the interest and you can direct your cash flow towards maybe other investments. You know, maybe funding insurance policies, you know, that's mm-hmm. putting money somewhere else where it's actually going to grow and sure. earn interest. Okay. So, but it puts you in a much safer position overall. Now, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, it's not for everybody.
Sure.
Okay. So if you got money in your pocket and it's just burning a hole in your pocket, you could get in trouble if you're not right. smart. You have to be disciplined and you have to have the ability to save money. Those are, you know, primarily what you have to have in place. And then obviously you have to have good financials to be approved by the lender. Now,
sure.
Okay. So I will say this. So if you own real estate, let's just talk about your primary address. If you own your primary address, in most cases, if you're cash flow positive, you're good with money, you should have a HELOC instead of a mortgage.
Okay.
Okay. So now as far as prioritizing paying your house off, okay. I've evolved away from that. I'm more interested in building wealth and having my money grow, not reducing debt, having my money grow. So that's where the infinite banking concept comes into play, where we're putting more money than what we have to into the whole life insurance policies because it's earning interest and it's earning dividends. And it's, you know, there's a lot of guarantees. So that's mm-hmm. kind of a different conversation, but me personally, what I do, I don't have a desire to pay my house off. That's kind of third in line in mm-hmm. my financial priority list. Okay. So,
yeah. And I think, and you know, I'm the same way, you know, years ago when I got first mortgage on the house, you know, mm-hmm. wanting to pay it off as soon as you can. And, yeah. you know, not to say that there isn't a feel good or good feeling of having mm-hmm. your house paid off. Interesting. A lot of that talk track came from, I think, our grandparents and maybe even, you know, stories from our great grandparents in the Great Depression. You know, a lot of people don't know this today, but, you know, back in the, you know, early 1900s through the 1930s, you know, there wasn't 30-year mortgages available. Yeah. And one of the precipices of the Great Depression that really just spiraled out of control is, you know, people saw the stock market tank. Okay, well, I'm going to take money out of my bank. Well, mm-hmm. then the bank's sitting there. It's like, okay, we got all these people taking out our deposits. We need cash. So then a lot of these mortgages were called or callable. So mm-hmm. if you, Adam, I'm the banker, and Adam, well, you know, you got a $100,000 balance left in your mortgage. Yeah, there's 15 years left on it. Sorry, we're calling that due. We need that $100,000 by tomorrow. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't think I can come up with the money quite that fast. So then the banks would say, well, we're calling this due. Sorry. So they take the house and they would be homeless. And well, this is what we're using to get the money. Well, now we got a foreclosed home and now we're going to do a short sale so we don't get as much money for it. So then we're going to call this loan. And then, you know, it just kind of spirals out of control after that. And a lot of people were, I guess, scarred by that, where, you know, hey, the banks have so much control. We need to pay off our mortgages as fast as we can so we own it and we cannot be kicked out. We can't be homeless. Now, fast forward several decades, that's not the case. You know, if it's a qualified mortgage, Freddie Fannie standards, you know, you got a 30-year mortgage, Bank of America or Wells Fargo cannot just come up and say, hey, we need money, Adam, I want you to pay this off by tomorrow. Now, if you're 90 days, 120 days delinquent, that's another story, but they can't call your loan due. And I think that's probably a misconception that still hangs on today of, you know, well, I've been told to pay off my mortgage as fast as I can. Well, why? Well, that's why I've been told to. Okay, well, why? And again, back to the independent thinking, digging, doing your own research, you can go back 8 decades and find that. As a real estate investor, I always look at for, you know, asset protection aspects. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, first position lien mortgages or HELOCs can be a great asset protection strategy. You know, if you're, you know, the proverbial drive-by lawsuit and a look, attorney starts looking at like, well, John's got this house owned free and clear. I'm just going to sue him and he'll have to sell that and take out money. Well, if there is a $50,000 loan on that, and I've been told by numerous attorneys, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, that typically if there isn't at least 50% equity in the property, they're not going to pursue it because they have to factor in the closing costs, the short sales, selling at a discount. And at the end of the day, if there is a lawsuit, and even if they pursue it, the bank, like you said, they're in first position. They get paid first. Yeah. They get paid no matter what. So, you know, take off $50,000 for that $100,000 proceeds. That's going to the bank, you know, no matter what.
Yeah. Well, if you think, if you understand how banks think and lenders think, right? Again, you know, you want to be in the safest position, especially if it's your asset, whether it's your primary address for rental property or whatever. So you talk about asset protection and being in the best position. Well, if you have a different place or places to build your equity that's not in the real estate, that's safer, that's growing, that's liquid, that has guarantees, asset protection, it's a biggie, okay? Tax benefits, okay? You know, when you understand these things, you realize building equity in real estate, if you understand where else to put it, is not the most efficient place to build equity.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you know, equity in real estate, are you getting a rate of return on that?
Nope.
No, you're not. Okay. If, again, if you're a lender and you have an, if you have someone's house collateralized, think about this for a second. What position are you safer in if there's a lot of equity in that house or if there's not much equity in that house?
Sure.
Okay. So me personally, so scenario A, I have my house almost paid off. Okay. And you have the bank over here. They're looking at me like, wow, I really hope that he defaults on his payments because if he does, we have an asset that we can make money off of compared to scenario B. Okay. I don't have a lot of equity in my house. I default on my payment. They're going to be more willing to work with me in scenario B rather than A. Okay. Now, especially if I say, well, I have a bunch of assets over here that you know, I expose to you, then they're like, yes, sir, we would love to work with you.
Sure.
And that's how they think. So mm-hmm. the more you can think like a banker,
yep.
Okay, the more that you understand what to do.
Well, isn't that the title of Nelson Nash's book, Be Your Own Banker? And that's obviously the thinking of it. One sidebar on that, and early next year, I'll be having on some insurance specialists for property and casualty insurance. But another sidebar, again, thinking like the bank, hopefully we never have this occur, but obviously, you know, houses become damaged because of wind or natural disasters. And mm-hmm. an interesting tidbit back to, you know, how much equity is in the home. If, you know, let's say you have your house and there's been some storm damage. Well, insurance companies tend to not pay out for every claim. They want to find a way to not pay mm-hmm. off. And like, well, was it the wind that took off the roof, or was it really some weakness in the trusses and that led to this? So we're only going to pay 50% of this claim, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, back to your example, if I have a house that I only have, say, $10,000 of a loan on it, $90,000 in equity, the bank has a small claim on it, they're going to be like, yep, you're on your own with the insurance company. But flip that around, you have a large claim and the insurance company says, well, we're not going to pay this. And maybe you have a $90,000 loan, $10,000 in equity. Well, the bank is listed as a loss payee of the loan. And obviously they want to get paid if something catastrophic happens, or they want claims to go through so their asset is solid. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure the bank's pockets are a little bit deeper than mine as far as attorneys and insurance companies and leverage with those insurance companies. So, you know, I think, you know, when you really open up your mind, having debt, good, smart debt, I should clarify, yes. on, you know, real assets, real estate, cash flowing assets can be a benefit. And, you know, as we're recording this, I think the latest numbers for inflation was what, 6.2, 6.4, whatever the official yeah. interest rate is. Well, or inflation rate, excuse me. Well, let's just say it's 6% and mortgage rates now are 3%. Well, if you can borrow at 3%, and inflation is at 6%, you're effectively debasing your debt anyways for inflation. Mm-hmm. Just like you hear from stories of, you know, your grandpa saying, well, back in my day, a bottle of Coke was 5 cents and now it's $2 or whatever the instance is. You know, your $500 mortgage payment or $500 HELOC payment today, based on inflation 10, 20, 30 years from now, that's going to be more debased and essentially feel like more of a $100 payment. So yeah, you're effectively making inflation work, work for your benefit versus just against you with the rising cost of gas or food or, you know, whatnot. Yep. So interesting. So I guess maybe the last question, Adam, so you've mentioned, as I understand, basically the HELOC would work as your bank account where all your income goes in, and then all your expenses come out, whether they're ongoing or maybe like an emergency, back to the liquidity and control. And I suppose everyone's scenario is a little bit different, but, you know, I can attest in a previous life, I was a commissioned salesperson. End of the year, I would have numerous bonuses, you know, maybe just high level if, you know, kind of a standard mortgage, 30-year mortgage, but then come December of every year, there's an extra $5,000, $10,000 that goes towards it. How would that impact, you know, the payoff? Would that go from like 30 years to maybe 10 years, or how do the numbers play into there?
Yeah, it's dependent upon the numbers, the size of the loan, the interest rate, where they're at in that amortized process. So okay. there's a lot of variables in there, but I've heard it said, typically if you make one extra mortgage payment per year for okay. the term, you'll knock off like 7 years on average. That could be okay. true. But yeah, again, if you have a mortgage and you throw a big chunk at it like that, that's all fine and dandy numbers wise, but where is that money? Okay. It's not in your possession anymore.
Right.
Okay. And as surprising as this may be, and I get into these debates or conversations all the time, you know, say it's a commercial bank that's holding the lien position on a mortgage. Okay. They would actually prefer a 15-year mortgage and you making additional principal payments because sure. that's more cash flow to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's something to consider. And I always talk to people about that, but yeah, with the HELOC, like I said, you can make huge additional principal payments. And then if you need the money back out, you can just pull it back out.
So right.
You have that security somewhat to do these large principal payments to reduce the balance, reduce the interest. But if you need the money back out, you can get it back out. So, okay. Let me do this. Let me share my screen. I'll just do like just kind of a real quick, you know, I don't want to get too crazy in the numbers, but I want people to, this is very simple. It's very, very simple. It's just different. So,
okay.
All I'm going to talk about here is just a person with a specific balance.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to use a balance. We're going to use an interest rate, and then we're going to use money going in and money coming out. Very simple. Okay. It's just a simple math equation. So just to use easy numbers, let's use someone who owes $300,000 on their house.
Okay.
And let's use 4% for an interest rate. And now let's say that this person, rather than holding their income in either checking or savings account, they don't do that, and they let it sit in the HELOC. And again, why do we hold money in bank accounts? Because it's easily accessible. So if I told you it's just as accessible or liquid in HELOC, that would kind of make you feel good about it. Okay. Because if you need it back out, you can get it. So let's just let's say this person or household is bringing in, say, $8,000 a month of income after tax.
Okay.
And they're spending, say, $3,500. Now, one thing to note about this, okay, the total monthly expenses does not include the mortgage payment because the mortgage is out of the picture.
Okay.
And that's very important to understand. And, you know, you can do multiple scenarios where people that have, maybe they have car notes and they have a balance and they could consolidate that. I'm not going to get into that right now. It's a little too lengthy, but. Okay. So these are just your standard monthly expenses. And this is just a random scenario. Like I said, everyone's different. So, okay. But the idea, the important thing here is the spread between these two. That is the key.
Okay.
Not so much the rate. Okay. This is what really affects things more than anything. So,
okay.
So based off of that, what I'm going to do is we're going to calculate this. We're going to say if someone had this starting balance, their rate was 4.
Mm-hmm.
Every single month, like clockwork, they put in $8,000 of their income and they pulled out $3,500. Now, as you know, as a family person, there's always, you know, more expenses sometimes over time,
Water heater goes out one month and the stove needs replacement the next month. Yes. There's always the variable expenses.
So, and we can get real granular with that. And I do with people, but for the sake of time, we'll just do this.
Okay? Sure.
So I'm basically just going to calculate this and I'm actually going to take this out. Okay. Actually there has to be something. So most people have a 30-year mortgage. So that's $300.
Yep.
Okay. So what you're seeing here is this. Okay, this is your graph. So you have your starting balance up here.
Yep.
And then this line across the top, that's illustrating a 30-year term. So you can see this kind of shoots way off of this graph.
Sure.
But if these numbers never changed every month, this person would be able to pay this $300,000 balance off in 76 months.
Wow.
Okay. Now, okay, there's other caveats to this, but just to show you how the monthly layout of this works, this is kind of what got me intrigued. Okay. Now, one thing to note too, let's say their house is worth $450,000. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The bank that gives them the HELOC, they're going to give them a line of credit of up to 90% of this, but we're going to use 80. So they take this appraised value, they multiply it by 80%. Okay. So they would have a line of credit of $360,000.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the spread between this and what their balance is in any given month, that's their liquidity position. Okay. So you can see as they pay it down, their liquidity position increases every single month. Okay. So that's something to think about. But again, so they're putting in $8,000, they're pulling out $3,500. And in month one, the interest that they owe is $1,000. So the math is this, minus that equals their principal reduction in 1 month. So you can see in 1 month, their balance goes down from 300 to 296.5.
Okay.
And that spread grows every month because guess what? They're owing less interest every single month. Okay.
More is going to principal, basically.
Correct. So every month, what they owe in interest is calculated off of the previous month's balance.
Okay.
So if you have cash flow, okay, and your balance is going down, your interest will, and so on and so forth. And so that's all I'm going to go over right now. I mean, there's a lot more to this, but that's the math on it. It's very simple. It's just you're holding your money in a different place and you're paying your expenses out of a different place. That's it. Okay. So, but again, it's very individualized and customized per person. So we really dig deep into all their numbers and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay. Very cool. And I appreciate the visual illustration for those listening to this in podcast format. Feel free to go to my YouTube channel, Wealth and Freedom Nexus. We will have the full video version of that as well, so you can see firsthand the numbers and how the principal reduction works on that. Adam, I just want to take the time and thank you again for sharing your knowledge and expertise with my listeners. Now, if either of these components or ideas, you know, pique some interest in any of my listeners, they're interested in, you know, a HELOC versus a mortgage and or utilizing the infinite banking concept, what's the best way for my listeners to reach out to you?
Yeah, the best way would be to just email me.
Okay.
And my email, I have a few different emails, but for now it's adamedwards@replaceyourmortgage.com.
Okay.
Okay. And you can email me there if you're interested in looking at your personal numbers as far as the HELOC strategy or infinite banking concepts as well. So
okay.
I have other things in the works with that as far as the website and all that stuff. But for now, just adamedwards@replaceyourmortgage.com.
Perfect. Sounds good. And then I think you had said before we started recording, you had Replace Your Mortgage had a video on YouTube, got a little bit more in-depth of the numbers. Is that correct?
Yeah. So actually, yeah, I did a live Zoom call a couple of weeks ago where we just invited people and there was about 60 people on there. So that's about an hour long, but it kind of breaks down, you know, a little bit more in depth of kind of what I just went through. So maybe, you know, I can send that link to you and then people can click on that and they could watch that too. That'd probably be pretty helpful.
Perfect.
Just to get started. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. When you get that sent over, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, maybe we can do this again. And it's been fun, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think you and I could both go down the rabbit hole on this for hours and hours. But like I said, I will have the additional resources in the show notes so you can reach out to Adam directly or watch the YouTube video and even the calculator itself. I'll put in the show notes so you can, you know, experiment with yourself. Every person's situation is different. Again, this isn't a one size fits all for everyone,
right. Yes.
But you know, if the numbers make sense and it works good for you, I mean, I don't know, paying off house or investment property in 7 years versus 30 is definitely appealing.
Yep. For sure.
So, yep. Sounds good. Well, thank you again for your time, Adam. I'll be sure to have you on another time.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.